there, and he, I think he owned the building at that time. That would be 1978. And Rodney Aller, as a lawyer, had an office in it, and I did. Part of it was unfinished. And then, of course, time went along. Rodney moved out, and Shipman and Goodwin, the law firm, I think Frank Dooley was, his firm moved in, and they eventually associated with Shipman and Goodwin. Yes, and I enjoyed that very much, about 6 years. I used to come down from Town Hill. Occasionally, I'd walk all the way in. It's about 3 miles, but most of the time, Tony would drive me partway, and I'd walk the rest of the way. But it was fun to be in town and to see the people, for I enjoyed the people in the post office. Almost always the same people at the same time. If you went over to the post office at 10 o'clock, you'd see the same group. I had a very, very good Labrador retriever named Jubal. It was a brown dog. And he was
that named Jubal?
Yes, yeah. Biblical.
Yeah.
And although he was named after General Jubal A. Early of the Confederacy, he was pretty well known around town because you're supposed to have leashes, but he was too good to put on a leash. And he used to sit on the doorstep of the post office when I was in and wait for me. And so he was just perfect. But now and again, I'd get a telephone call about he'd gone to somebody's yard.
Oh.
Something had happened. But he was part of it. And we enjoyed the years there very much. I like to have, I wish I had an office in town all the time, but obviously I don't. Couldn't afford it, and there's no reason to. I mean, now.
Yeah.
Yes, so I had that office, and it's right behind the post office.
Let's take a look at your interest in the Civil War.
Well, interest in the Civil War started when I went to Hotchkiss, as a matter of fact, and I read the biography of Thomas Jonathan Jackson, known as Stonewall, by a British author named Henderson. And this was a very appealing, exciting biography. And that it moved me, so I said, I'd like to go down and see where he operated, just for fun. I've read about these places, the Valley Campaign, so on. Let's go down. Well, my wife had a roommate, or classmate anyway, who lived in Richmond. So, we made an opportunity to go down and visit her friend at vacation. And that gave me a chance to go to the battlefields to start, particularly around Richmond. And then on the way back, we came up through the valley. Down around Richmond, the 7 days took place in June and July 62. And there was no government parks. Then there were one or two places, some places were marked. This would be in 1939. Some places were marked, but I was able to wander through the fields, and I found my first bullet down at Cold Harbor. And then I got into patches of farmers' tomatoes and corn and things. You could find bullets all over the place. It was just great. So I got excited about that and read some more. And it began to blossom, and I decided I'd better have a look at some of the other battlefields, so I went to Gettysburg. I went as far away as Shiloh. My father wanted to go down and see, I wanted to see a covered bridge somewhere down near Bardstown, Kentucky. And so I said, I'll drive you down, and we'll go over to Shiloh from there, and you see your bridge, I'll go and see the battlefield, and we did. We had a wonderful time. Then, of course, the battlefields in Virginia and in the east were pretty accessible. And I went all the way down to Florida, as far down as Ulustee, where some Connecticut regiments fought, incidentally. That was in northern Florida, a campaign where they decided to go from Jacksonville across the top of the peninsula over toward the capital, and were driven out by the Confederates. In fact, the Connecticut regiment was supposed to have broken and run disgracefully in the battle. But the fun came in being able to find artifacts, shells. I've got a piece of a pipe, soldier's pipe, clay pipe. It's right on my desk. Been there. It came from Shiloh. Bullets of all kinds. I went out during the war. I was stationed in Washington for several months, and I couldn't get a place for my family to live. They were living in Williamstown at that time. And every Sunday, I would go out and stand on beside the road which went out to Bull Run and through the Manassas Junction and on out into Virginia. And it was no trick at all to get a ride, because all military people got a ride without even raising your thumb. They just said, "Want a ride?" So I'd get a ride out and I'd get a ride back, and I'd spend a day out there. And I think I must have had 300 or 400 bullets from the Bull Run.
You found some artifacts in this area,
yes.
The Indians, right?
Well, I found those, but I also found some artifacts in this area where the foundry was and where they built the cannon. Why his name escapes me now, but anyway.
That's where the Lakeville Journal office was at one time?
No.
Oh, no.
The foundry I'm talking about is over on the Housatonic. And
oh.
There he built this large coastal gun, it was really. And it was, I would say, it was about a 7-inch diameter, the shell. And it was purchased for $1 a pound, and each one weighed 19,000 pounds. And this man set it up, I'll think of his name. He set it up, and then the war stopped. And of course the government said, "We're sorry, our orders are all canceled," and he busted, because he got him, put his money into getting this ready and going. There's some pictures of him, very old pictures, standing beside his gun.
What was this, during the Civil War?
Yes,
yeah.
Very definitely during the Civil War. According to they said that he had a proving ground there. So I fussed around. This would be in 1941, 40, 41. I fussed around to find out where the proving ground was, because that's where you fire into the hillside. And the story was that they did fire into the hillside. And occasionally something bounced over. Now, that would mean it'd come into Salisbury, because it's just on the other side over there. It's just on the river road on the west bank.
Oh, is that a Dugway Road?
Yes, I think.
In other words, it's the road that goes by the Trinity Church and up that way along the river?
Yes, but you go beyond the church and along the river to where they cross the river, and then you swing left and go up.
Oh, where the dam is,
yes,
up there?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yes.
Where the dam is.
Yeah, where they just rebuilt that road.
Yes,
I forgot the name of it.
You
I think
can
it is
see,
Dugway. Yeah.
You can see the where the old foundry was. You
uh-huh.
can see the places.
Well, take a look.
And so I rustled around and found it was what I thought was the proving ground north of this area, about a few hundred yards. They had a very flat place, leveled off, still clear. You could see it. And it went across into the mountainside, really, across the road. So I went over there and I dug up. I didn't have to dig up, as a matter of fact. I found lying there pieces of lead and iron, and I pieced together a shell, the base of a shell. These obviously were not exploding in the sense that you were trying to blow up a building. They were just firing it to see how often it would fire before it burst, before it got too hot to use. How many times could you fire it? And, excuse me, so I pieced together this, and I had it, I say it was about 6 or 7 inches. I had a box full of this. Mr. Van Sanford came over with me. He was that kind of a person. When I told him about it, all his ears pricked right up, and over he came. And his wife, too. And we had a fine time. I can see him taking off his coat and putting all these pieces of shell in and carrying them. The rather romantic conclusion is that I took this metal, And when we got into the war in 41, turned it into the scrap collection so that it was complete recycled. And this is from the Civil War right to the World War II, skipping World War I. But it, we put it in, and I think there was an article in the Journal about it. Not long when I came back here after being at Mercersburg and all and came here, somebody from the Journal came and we had a long talk about it, and I think there was an article about it somewhere back there.
Let's try to identify the site. In other words, if I understand correctly, you go over the bridge, right?
You go up, you know, Sugar Hill Road?
Yeah.
Well, you go the road that Sugar Hill turns off like that. Well, you go along the river.
Along the river.
And you keep going past what is, you'll see some old stone foundations, which were the foundations of the foundry, where they had the machinery, I suppose, and whatnot. And I would say you go up, it wouldn't be maybe a quarter of a mile. It wouldn't be very far. On the left, you'll see a hillside that is now a little bit overgrown at the bottom, but it's still been cut and mowed, and I'll take you there if you want to go, but
Let's start from you take a left turn off 112 going past Trinity and the graveyard, yeah, and you're on that road, right?
Yep.
Now you go on that road past Britton Hill.
Yes.
Britton Hill comes in.
Yes.
And is it before you get to the dam, or so you still continue going?
You continue
now,
going.
When you get to where the bridge that goes towards Falls Village, you go left.
Exactly.
And then you go along the river road there.
You go left, and the road jogs left, and then goes up the river.
Yeah.
You go up the river.
I gotcha.
And you go along there, the road will go this way, and then it'll make a swing to the left. Not a very sharp one. Right on that corner was where it's gone now.
Yeah.
You can't see it. Trees have grown up. That flat place that I found is all gone. Trees are in it, and it's shut. And on top of that, across into the where they fired has all grown up. And I took, Carol Wagner, I think, has a mine detector. And I borrowed that or somebody's. And I couldn't find anything now. Can't find anything. I'm sure there's stuff in there, but I can't find it. What I'm most interested in now is trying to find out where the proving ground was in Sharon for the Hotchkiss gun. And I've made the inquiries, but nobody knows, and it isn't in their historical material.
Are you acquainted with the history of the furnace in Lime Rock, presumably as having been used for the building of the monitor, was it?
I really don't know. I'm not acquainted with it. I know about the furnace over there. I didn't know did they make some of the plates for the monitor?
So I have been told in interviews, but I'm not established that.
Over here on our foundry, they made cannonballs and links of the chain. There's an interesting book out called Chaining the Hudson. You might enjoy reading it. I've got it. I'll lend it to you.
Oh, good. I'd like
Chaining Hudson, it's quite a thing. I didn't realize, but they describe it rather well. They describe the Hudson as a fjord. If you go over there and see the fjords, and you realize what it's like, there's no falls, no drop. The Hudson goes right up all the way beyond Albany, up to Saratoga, and all the way to Lake George, really. And you can sail up there. So the British had an idea, and it wasn't a bad one. They, with their control of the water, would do this. Well, of course, the idea was to put a chain across, and they did a lot of funny things. They put a kind of a battus around, and they sunk things here and there, and none of them really worked, although the chain itself was good enough. The point was that was at West Point, that it's been, they lost the original, or it misplaced it, and they had some copies, and there's some false links around, and it's pretty difficult, I think, to, according to the book, they've got it pinned down now, but for a while it was rather difficult to find an original link in the real thing. So, you know, people, look, I've got it here and I'll sell you this one, and so forth, typical antique dealer idea. But it's a good book. You'd like it.
Yes, I would.
I'll get that.
Okay.
Now, the Civil War, that's the background there. I found that the fun was to be able to pick up the stuff and come home and be on the exact position where you read about Hazel Grove and the Battle of Chancellorsville and what an important position it was and how the North gave it up and the Confederates took it over. And you can see where the enfilading fire went through to the main road. It's a fascinating thing to do. I really enjoyed it. And at Bull Run, during the war, as I say, I got out there and I got to know the man who ran the government museum there. And the government owns much of the land. The farmers farm it, but only at the pleasure of the government. And I didn't want to get caught because they arrest you for trespass if you're on some of these. So I've got to know Major Hanson. We got to be fast friends, and I made a deal with him. If I found anything unusual, I'd give it to him for his museum. But if I found just the ordinary bullets, of which he had hundreds and thousands, then I'd keep it. So we had a fine working arrangement. And there were families along the roads that I got to know. And it really was a very pleasant experience to go out. And they were so kind, they'd invite me for Sunday lunch. And the flies would come in off the manure pile out under the window and land on my tomatoes. I can see it now. And they had little children. They were fascinating. I remember there were two little boys and they had a football. And they were absolutely flabbergasted when I took the football and kicked it over the bar, which wasn't much of a feat. For them, just out of this world. So I was their friend forever after. They would do anything. They'd get bullets for me. They'd do all the rest of it. But I like to find them myself. But they let me go through all their fields. That was the first thing I wanted to make sure. The outhouse in one of the places had a nice little half moon in the door, the way they do in all the cartoons. I remember sitting there one day, and the man, I think his name was Caldwell, he had been drinking, and these people often did. They made their own stuff, you know. He'd have a little applejack and a slug of it here and there. And somebody came over, and they got into an argument. And I was afraid to come out. They got into a honey of it. They were going to have all kinds of a fight about it. But anyway, it was what life was. He said, I want to show you the Jackson Monument. That's from the second Bull Run. And it's up on the railroad cut, which is the furthest really northwest of on the battlefield. So we started off through the woods, and it's so overgrown now. You can't really tell much about the terrain, at least at that part of it. And we went along looking for it. I can see the ticks falling off the tree on him, crawling up the back of his neck and so forth. I kept thinking to myself, I didn't know, they didn't know in those days about the mountain disease, the Rocky Mountain disease, but they were still pretty bad news. And I kept thinking, well, the ticks take a drink out of his blood, they're gonna just roll over. It's loaded with alcohol, and I have a feeling they won't like it. But they were nice, kindly people. They wanted to help. He said when he was a kid, they used to rake up the bullets in his front yard, just like acorns. And I was saying, boy, we like that sort of thing is what makes the Civil War interesting. I stopped at a place down on the Seven Days down near Glendale, and a farmer near Malvern Hill too. This farmer, I remember I said, do you find any of these bullets? Oh, yes, I find those bullets. He said, I use them for sinkers on my fishing line. You could just hear, to me, it was a treasure. It's just a commonplace thing for him.
How old now is David Ward's Civil War Roundtable? Do you know?
A little over a year.
Oh, just recent. Just recent. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't
realize. Maybe 2 years.
Yeah, so that's
but it's very recent.
Uh-huh, right.
You want to come? You were there once.
Yeah,
I know.
Oh, no, I've been there.
I missed the dinner.
I missed the last two times.
I
missed the dinner, too. We had some friends up,
yeah.
And I missed the time before that.
Yeah.
But no, I've been there otherwise.
Well, that's good, because I think he does a very good job, and I'm sorry to miss this winter.
Yeah.
I go away, and he's got somebody good, Robertson or somebody coming.
Oh, he's had wonderful
yeah,
people.
Yeah, he's extremely
there.
Good. Anyway, that's the Civil War, and it's, of course, you see, what licked me during the after the war was the mine detector. And I was at what they called, I can see the man now, it was at Antietam, and I was walking along, and he said, he had his mine detector, and he looked down his nose at me, and he said, "You're a surface under." And I said, "Yeah, that's right." It's too bad, because they just ran me out when they went across. I was, for instance, it was a place at Mercersburg, you see, I'd take off and go down to Antietam or down to or Lee across the Potomac at Williamsport. They had quite a fight there first. And I had a field where I picked up stuff almost every time, good cornfield, and I knew it was good. One day I went down there and here were all these little holes. This guy had put his mine detector, found it, taken his little shovel, scooped it out, sifted it, gotten his bullet. And that was the end of me. I mean, I haven't followed it so much lately, and I haven't found anything for years because I haven't been able to get down, and I know that I'm defeated if I do.
You know, a few years ago, about 3 years ago, I read a book on Shays' Rebellion.
Oh, yes.
At Hotchkiss. Yeah?
There's a monument. Have you seen
it? In the one near Great Barrington?
Yes.
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 I interviewed I've forgotten her name, but presumably her husband is a descendant of Tom Paine. I don't know whether true or not. Of course, it would have meant an illegitimate affair, I guess.
Yeah, well.
But apparently there was some involvement from this community, and I wondered, did you ever run across any...
Never ran across that. No, I'd be interested. I never did, and I went up, of course, to look at the monument there, and I don't know, it doesn't signify much because it's all grown up and changed
yeah,
and so forth for that distance.
Yeah.
I've hunted revolutionary battlefields, mainly Saratoga,
uh-huh.
And all I got was poison ivy up there.
Anderson did a column for the Lakeville Journal that I haven't looked up yet. I happened to run across a reference to that, I ran across a reference to his having done something on Shays Rebellion, so I dropped him a note. He's now on Long Island, and apparently he referred me to an article. I haven't looked it up yet.
Anderson, what's your...
The one that used to write a column in the, for the Audubon Society.
Oh,
and,
I see.
In the Lakeville Journal.
Yeah.
Now, a few specific things, and then we'll, anything else that you have there. But you have referred a number of times to Tony, your wife.
Wife.
And just to put it in... To the record, her name is
Antoinette Treadway Fowle. She
right.
She was the daughter of the man who ran, really initiated the Treadway Inns
Treadway
in New
Inn.
England.
Yeah. Yeah,
the real New England Inns.
Yeah, we've eaten there.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, oh, very good. I have some questions in terms of just some projection of your ideas, but do you have anything else that you want to add first?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't know. I probably haven't done justice to all the people
in
town.
Oh, very good, Bill. Don't say that. That was very comprehensive. That was a very
well,
good...
We'll see.
What I wanted to ask conclude the interview would be, what advice would you give to current Hotchkiss students, if you get my drift, right? In other words, what would you transmit as educational philosophy or so on, as well as to that question, and then what in relation to the town? What do you think would help the town grow in the right way?
Well, I think it's important for this town to grow in the direction of getting young people to come back here and live. Therefore, you have to offer them some sort of employment, something to attract them, and housing, that sort of thing, which has been done. Ben Belcher was very much interested in that and did a lot for it. Very civic-minded fellow. And he did that, the Sarum Village, I think, up here. At any rate, I would advise kids today to be curious, active, and I think diverse in their pursuits. There's a great deal of thing, there are a great many things which you can pursue of interest, whether it be history or the future or whatever. And I think the thing they have to do is to get at it. One of the things that always impressed me about Hotchkiss students is compared to kids I'd known in other schools, not necessarily private schools, but public schools too, was that they were intelligently curious. They'd go after things. And as a result, even though they had a head start in the sense that they came from families with some background, they would improve on it. And that's a great thing. And everybody, in a way, ought to do that with whatever their life is. Your life may have been rather modest in the sense of the background, but there can be improvement. And I think that's what I push for them to do. It's too bad today. There's too much apathy, and we have all kinds of problems, drugs and things, which to me, I don't know. I think the drugs, as one man told me, he was a doctor, he said, "I'd rather have my son dead than on drugs." He said, "That's the way I feel about it." And I used to be, I tried when I was in the school world. And the kids used to tell me, and I'd have some very frank talks with some of them, because that's the only way you can find out what's going on. And they'd say, "Well, you get all head up about it." I said, "You bet I do. What you're doing, you just can't play with this." And it's gotten worse, and what I told them has happened, and I just hope it hasn't happened to them. But it's you can see it in typical with the kids. They say, "Well, I'll try it, you know, try it." Apparently, crack is something you can't try. If you try it, you're in.
You're hooked.
Yeah, yeah. And it's that depends really on the temperament of the youngster. And some of them are that way, you know. I'll show you. I can try it and I can handle it. Pretty bad. But I would hope we could keep people here, get them back, and we could keep it going that way. And I would say, for instance, for young black kids, I always wanted them to go back after they'd finished education at a preparatory school and go on to college. Go back to your community and help the black people there, get them stirred up to come out. Because today, we hear it over and over again, they just get into the ghetto and stay there and sort of live on the principles of street life, often. I'm sorry for them, but we need to get them out. So if these kids who are really privileged don't use it, it's noblesse oblige, if they don't really use it, that's a shame. They've wasted some.
Do you think that one, in terms of just generally across the country, or more specifically in relation to our community, and there might be a difference, that people are, how should I put it, that they are respectful of education, desirable of education, because we do have 20 or 25% now illiterate population, right?
Yeah.
Would you say, well, perhaps in relation to our own community, would you
well,
say
our own community is pretty good. I think our own community is fine, because I work with the Bauer Foundation here in town, and we give money to kids to go to college.
Yeah.
Not much, it's just a pittance. It's terrible, but it helps. And we get a lot of applications. I think there'll be 70, you told me they're going to be pretty soon.
Did you say 70?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, nice.
And these kids, well, they're all sorts. I mean, they're kids. There's some of those are faculty children from the schools like Salisbury and Hotchkiss. where they haven't got salaries sufficient to do college today. It costs $20,000 to go to Dartmouth, and Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all those places. And it's way out of reach.
Tell me about that Flower Foundation.
Bauer.
Oh, Bauer Foundation.
B-A-U-E-R. Uh-huh. Now, that was left by a woman, and she has two. One is called the Bauer Fund. That was left, and she said, I think the income is about $15,000 a year. And it would go to a student who goes to Wellesley or Cornell. Around here, nobody knew about it for years. It just lay fallow, so to speak. And we advertised it sufficiently. Now people are coming, and there you see you could pick up $7,000 to go to Cornell or Wellesley, and it'd be all yours on the scholarship, better, and you wouldn't have to fight for it, all the rest. Then now it's more competitive. The other one is the Bauer Fund. No, that's the fund, the foundation. The foundation was created to help local kids go to school, and it dipped down as far as Indian Mountain, and then it went into the secondary level, and didn't do much with the college, some. We got it. Stivey Burns is the lawyer for Shipman and Goodwin, who is the trustee, I believe, now. Campbell Beckett was a trustee for a long time. But Cam got to the point of where he was a little too casual, and then he began to slip a little. And somebody would come up to him on the street and say, sir, I'd like to get a scholarship. And he'd say, well, you're a nice kid, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. We didn't think that was quite the way to operate. And so Stivey got Mrs., she's the high sheriff of Litchfield County, Caroline Wakefield. Used to be in the high school.
That's right.
Caroline and I are the two members of the board, and Stivey. Oh. And there's a secretary, Joan, can't think of her name, Wilkinson. Joan Wilkinson is the secretary, and so we operate the thing. We've made out a form, so they have to fill it out. We have set the parameters and the rules so that they have to come from this school district, the northwest corner. They have to, they're going to college, and we're going to help them in the college area. And we've stuck to that. We've dropped the elementary and high school because we haven't enough money. I don't know, we give away $18,000 to $20,000 a year, and we do it in segments of $500, which is, as you say, it's just a pittance. I think I'm embarrassed. But anyway, I keep fighting to give bigger ones and fewer. Caroline doesn't like that so much. She worked with the high school, and she's marvelous because she's in touch with all the high school, and there are lots of little places here that give money. It's amazing.
Oh, sure.
What goes on, and they know them all. And so I learned quite a bit, but I think it's there's something that's very good. It's typical of the town. And there's still another one. It needs a Jerry Bowen, some of the devil. The name of it escapes me for the minute, but that has even less money. And we give out maybe 6 or 7 scholarships. Miss Wiles, it's the Wiles Fund. Mm-hmm. And that fund, the Wiles Fund, supports the Dial-A-Ride. They started it sort of, I think. Fran Wagner and somebody got it started, but they support it. $1,500 a year or something, which darn near does it, because the car comes from Millerton Garage, and the drivers are all volunteers, and all the rest, and that's what I do at the desk here. Uh-huh. So there are many things going on.
And you're a participant in a number of, and you volunteer in terms of a number of those things. Yeah, that's characteristic of the community, I think.
I think so, too. This community is just great.
Yeah.
And they have some very wealthy people in it, too, like Reese Harris and Whitridge, who do things for the quietly for the town. Belcher has done a lot.
Belcher.
Oh, yes. So that it's a very real humane, if you like, human beings, as they're interested in other human beings. So it's good.
So that spells good for the town.
Yes, right? Yes it does, and I think it's going to go on. The thing I don't want is to have it disappear because people go away, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you're so right about the young people.
Oh, yeah, but for instance, somebody complained, and I won't name names, but somebody complained about the Fall Festival. It brings people to town here. They get interested in it, and more people, and we're just going to be swamped with it. Well, now the Fall Festival has all sorts of facets to it. Yes, it does bring some people here, but it doesn't mean that they're going to come and settle and ruin the place. And it pulls things together. I told you during the war that, that whatever the council was that we had met in the firehouse and took care of all the functions of a town and a place. We even, as I told you, we watched for airplanes and things of that nature. And
oh,
had,
yes.
Had various health functions. So if there was a raid and people were, we had actual trials where we had somebody with an arm here, arm broken, shoulder blown apart and all that, and you had to go and get them to the hospital and handle all the things, and the doctors had to be there. So it was, but that did more for the town. As I said, one good thing out of a war is that it makes you in the town get together.
Brings people together.
Brings them together, and you get to know each other, and you find they're darn good people. You never knew them, that's all. Very good people. And that's a surprising thing, but it's awfully good for everybody, I think.
Well, very good, Bill. This was certainly
Well, anything, good. If there's anything else you want or...